the overseers who, after all, were only humans of a different kind, fraternized rather too freely with the purple people of the earth. They became altogether too friendly, and the inferior people of the earth had inflated ideas of their own importance. They thought that if the gods associated with them, they must be wonderful. And so they were impressed with the strange, strange weapons and devices of the gods. They were impressed with the boxes which showed pictures and produced voices and music out of the air, and they plotted and schemed whereby they could overthrow the gods, the overseers, and obtain those devices for themselves. Strange vehicles known as the chariots of the gods flamed across the sky by day and by night. The gods were busy seeing about the new earth, seeing about the welfare of the people of the new earth, but they still had time to fraternize with the people. A scheme was concocted whereby one young lady who was particularly attractive to the overseers should make herself even more attractive to one particular overseer. And the plan was that while the gods were otherwise engaged, one might say, the men would kill the gods. The gods became aware of the plot. They became aware that mankind was very, very faulty. They became aware that mankind had treacherous thoughts, lusted after power, had pride, 211, false pride. And so mankind was driven away from that peculiarly pleasant spot. In other words, they were driven out of the Garden of Eden by angels with flaming swords. Now just think, supposing a savage who had never seen a jet plane saw one of these things going across the sky roaring like a blowtorch, wouldn't it be a chariot of the gods? Supposing he saw a gun which was being fired, he saw smoke and perhaps a bit of flame coming out of the barrel, couldn't that be a flaming sword? He would have to call it something, and he wouldn't know about revolvers. A flaming sword is good enough, it got down through the history books, and all that. In the course of time the natural evolution of the earth caused earthquakes and tremors, caused continents to sink and continents to rise. Most of the people of the earth were destroyed in various catastrophes and calamities. But certain people were refugees and they escaped to high land. Certain of them, in fact, live on through their racial memories. For instance, have you ever seen a native of darkest Africa who was not black but almost a purplish black? Think of that. You will agree that there are already at least three races on this earth, the black people, the yellow people, and the white people. They are three different races, and there is quite a lot of discord among them, a racial discord, as if each one thinks that the other one is an intruder. So we come back to the Garden of Eden, and we find that when the gods walked upon the earth they were kind and considerate. They were not gods, of course, but the overseers from right out of this universe. Humans tried to take advantage of them, and the original sin of humans was not sex, which is a natural function of humans, but pride and rebellion. Of course the church in the time of Pope Gregory and, in fact, many times in the church's history, had a great phobia against sex. They had no phobia against pride. So because it suited their purpose, they said that the fall of man was through woman. The fall of man was because woman tempted him with sex. Woman was the sinner, the temptress, the offender every time. There is nothing in the Bible, nor in true Christian belief, which supports the statement that man's fall was through sex. Christ himself was never opposed to women. He never thought that woman was an inferior creature to be treated as a dog or worse. 212 St. Augustine and many others took advantage of the rewriting of the Bible to preach even more and more violently against sex. Augustine was one of those who was terribly, terribly opposed to sex even in marriage. It is perhaps worth a thought here that there is no greater opponent of drink than the reformed drunkard, there is no greater opponent of vice, so-called, than the person who has been reformed from vice. 213, Chapter 12, Religion and Science. Question, what do you think of religion? Answer, oh good gracious. I thought I had closed the Bible for the present, but of course I must say that I am for religion. A short time ago I had a letter from a student priest. He took me to task, he said, in one of your books you refer to the Convention of Constantinople in the year 60. I cannot find anything about it in the Bible. There was a convention at Constantinople in the year 60. There is nothing in the present-day Bible about it because the church authorities have rewritten the Bible quite a number of times. Even now there are frequent meetings in Rome to decide what shall be taught and what shall be suppressed, and what religious sect shall be recognized or ostracized. Religion is constantly in the making. It is clear that the teaching as it was 2,000 years ago would not necessarily be the most suitable now. It has to be brought up to date to deal with modern requirements. My student priest friend wrote to me in some consternation, some anger even, saying that I had misled him. I have had the pleasure of replying and saying that it was not I, but his superiors who misled him. He should consult books and papyri and come to his own conclusion. I'm not trying to change anyone's religion. I firmly believe in a God. I may call him by a different name than that used by a Christian, or a Jew, or a Mohammedan, but I believe in a God and I am sure that there must be religion. Religion gives mental and spiritual discipline. If more religion was taught now, there would be less juvenile delinquency. I am all for religion. I am strongly in favor of priests provided they teach the truth, provided that they recognize that all men have a right to their own belief. Some time ago in Europe I appeared in Buddhist robes and crossed the street to a taxi. A priest of a certain sect saw me and nearly collapsed as if he was looking at the devil himself. He crossed himself several times, and hurried away quite rapidly with complete loss of dignity. I looked on in amusement. I believe that the 214 greatest rule of all is, do as you would be done by. It doesn't matter to me if a man wears a particular form of dress, it doesn't matter to me if he is a Christian priest or a Jewish rabbi, if he is a good man I respect him. If he is a sham in some priestly vestment, then I despise him, or sorrow that he has not the perceptions to know the harm he is doing. For the priests of any sect at all have a great, great responsibility. People look up to them and expect help and truth. Much of that which is taught in religion, any religion, not just Christianity, any religion, or in history, is altered to suit the political powers of the time or the time itself. Consider again Sir Francis Drake. In England he is a great hero, in Spain he is regarded as a quite unmentionable pirate. Which is right? To bring the matter closer home, how about the Graf's P? The Germans thought this was a heroic ship manned by a heroic crew, but the British and the Americans thought that this was a pirate ship preying upon peaceful merchantmen. So the British destroyed the pride of Germany's navy. Which do you think was right? The German viewpoint, or the British? In Hitler's Germany, history was destroyed and rewritten. In Russia, if one would believe the current history books, most of the great inventions in the world came from Russia. I wonder if Henry Ford would be called Fordsky in Russia? I have read that the Russians claim they have invented the aeroplane, the telephone, the motor car. They seem to have invented the word no, Nyet. They also invented the Cold War. However, we are not dealing with politics, but I will say that the danger is not Russia but China. So, do not believe all that is in print, but think for yourself, and if you want something stronger than thought, if you cannot get to the great libraries of the world, get busy with your astral traveling. When you can do astral traveling, you can consult the Akashic Record, and the Akashic Record cannot be tampered with. There is no way of erasing the Akashic Record, no way of concealing true knowledge. It is available for those who have eyes with which to see, and for those who have ears with which to hear. Quite amusing about religions, really. If one forgets that religion is merely a mental and spiritual discipline. Some religions say one must not eat pork, another says you must not eat meat on Friday. One religion says the body from the neck, 215, down must be covered while the face is uncovered. Another religion says one can be as naked as a boiled egg provided the face is covered. I say, do as you would be done by, that is the best religion of all. Question. You say some unkind things about scientists, but don't you think that only scientists can save us? Answer, well, it depends on what you mean by scientists. I believe that many of the so-called scientists are just chair polishers. People like Royce of Rolls-Royce, Edison, and Ford, and a few like that, they were real scientists. They had not been to schools where their thought was cemented into rock-bound channels, In other words, they did not think that things were impossible. They had never been conditioned to think that a thing was impossible, so they went out and did the impossible. Many universities specialize in teaching their students that unless Professor Dogsbody or Professor Kasiska does it, no one can do it. That is all nonsense. I think the educated scientist is a menace because he is educated to believe that nothing can be done unless he or his fellows do it. Some people think that in the matter of parallel worlds I should have quoted Einstein. But why should I quote Einstein? I can assure anyone who is interested that there are books about Einstein and his theories, and so anyone interested is recommended to purchase suitable books so that they may study the theories of Einstein. Einstein dealt with theories. He theorized according to the facts available at the time, but you see, we must not always be led astray by what appears to be the obvious, because the obvious is not always so obvious. For instance, a scientist was studying the behavior of fleas. He thought he could correlate the behavior of fleas' psychosomatic patterns with that of humans. After all, fleas thrive exceedingly well on human blood, so our scientist went in for the study of fleas, an itching process, if I may say so. With great care and the expenditure of much time, he trained a medium-sized flea to jump over a matchbox every time he said, "Go." Then when the flea had the idea, the scientist pulled off two of the flea's six legs. "Go," he said. The flea jumped again, and was able to repeat the performance although not so successfully as before. The scientist grunted, with satisfaction, and pulled off two more of the six legs. "Go, 216, 217, said the scientist. Feebly they did so, and the scientist nodded his approval. Reaching for the flea, he pulled off the poor creature's last two legs. Unfortunately, now that the flea no longer had legs, the scientist could shout "go" endlessly and the flea would not move. The scientist, after many tries, nodded his wise old head and wrote in his report, "A flea's hearing is in its legs. When it loses two legs, it cannot hear so well and so does not jump too high. When it loses all six of its legs, it becomes completely deaf." Let us not be in the position of the scientist who tried to study fleas. Let us not blind ourselves to the obvious. If Einstein is correct, then there can never be any real space travel. It would take too long, because Einstein postulated the theory that nothing could travel faster than the speed of light, and as light from distant planets may take centuries and centuries to reach us from its source, and if Einstein is correct in his theory, we cannot hope to ever move to other planets. Fortunately, Einstein is not correct. Fortunately, he is correct only on the information which he possessed at the time of his theorizing. Consider the world in 1863 instead of 1963. We are back in the year 1863 then. Scientists tell us that man will never travel at more than 30 miles an hour. For a man to move faster than that would be to tear air from his lungs. It would not be possible for a man to travel faster. 30 miles an hour, then, is as fast as one can ever move. There can be no aircraft in the skies, there can only be a few hot air balloons, and for that presumably, there will have to be a lot of speakers and lecturers and those who criticize lecturers, because there would be an inexhaustible source of hot air to send balloons soaring aloft. But we are told in this year 1863 that there will never be aircraft. As man developed more lethal inclinations and new instruments of war, it was discovered that man could live beyond the 30 miles an hour limit. He could even go as fast as 60 miles an hour. And when the railroads were first laid down by George Stephenson, people thought that the absolute ultimate had been reached in speed. In England, in fact, motor cars were thought to be such dangerous vehicles that they had to be preceded by a man on foot and waving a red flag. But I believe they have got beyond that stage in England now in 218 cars, and they go a little faster, almost as fast, in fact, as they do in this part of the world. We came up with the theory not so long ago that the absolute speed limit was that imposed by sound. We were told by reputable scientists that no man would ever travel faster than the speed of sound. It was impossible. Now there are passenger aircraft being manufactured which can exceed the speed of sound. Warcraft continually travel faster than the speed of sound, leaving in their wake broken windows and furious exclamations from the owners of those broken windows. Fortunately, the pilots are going beyond the speed of sound, and so vituperation does not reach them until they alight at their airport and find that their commanding officer is dancing with rage at the messages he has received. We have discovered, then, that the speed of sound does not limit us, we can travel faster. And yet not so long ago people like Einstein said man would never travel faster than the speed of sound. If these men have been proved to be incorrect in their assumption, why should it not be that Einstein also is incorrect in his theory that light is the absolute limit of speed? When people travel beyond the speed of light, they will be able to see each other and see what lies ahead of them. The only difference is that the things that they will see will be of a different color, which will be quite an interesting thing and which will be the same, I suppose, as looking at women's artificial faces under fluorescent lighting or sodium lamps. The whole point is that if one goes traveling in excess of the speed of light, then one will be approaching the clairvoyance stage of seeing, and will see things in four dimensions instead of three. I would like here to quote what the great scientists have said about the Earth. Scientists said that the Earth was flat. Ancient mythology states that the Earth was flat and strange demons lurked over the edge of the flat Earth. My own experience is that most of the demons live on this earth. No one would seriously believe now that the earth is flat. It is a common belief that the earth is a more or less round contraption, and people have even been out in little spacecraft to take a good look. Thus, we can say that the scientists have been wrong in most of their science. Unfortunately, certain religious leaders made it an offense punishable by death to say that the earth was round. And not so many years ago people were nicely toasted at the stake for saying that the earth was round, 219, and not flat. However, I suppose we all have to die at some time, and there is always the consolation that if one is thoroughly surrounded by fire one dies of suffocation before the flames reach one, not that that would be much consolation to the victim tied at the stake. If we are going to get some scientists' technical theory as the limits of what we might do or say or think, then we are going to put ourselves in the position of a railway locomotive which is confined to rails. People on the train pulled by that locomotive can only see a very limited amount which lies on either side of the track they traverse. They are not able to diverge to see by ways off the main highway. People who travel by car, or even on foot, see more and learn more. People who travel on foot are the slowest, but they learn more and more in detail and are perhaps the best off in the end, while people who travel by air may be going so fast and so high that they see nothing at all. So let us meander along, not disporting ourselves with the scientific theories of great men which may be wonderful in mathematical formula, but which do not necessarily correspond to the real facts of life and the afterlife. Western civilization occupies much less than a tenth of a second of celestial time. If you think of the age of the earth, you will find that man in any of his forms upon this earth does not even occupy 1 minute of the 24 hours of the earth's existence. People who can do astral traveling or who are clairvoyant or telepathic can get a much better impression of what is going on, for those people know that man upon earth is just one manifestation of a spirit. There have been other forms of body. There have been other forms of corporeal existence. The physical body of mankind on the earth is just one of a long, long series of experiments to see which form will afford a spirit body the best chance of learning the most and the easiest and the quickest. Mankind is not the ultimate. Do not believe that it is. No words of religion, no scientists' theories can ever convince the celestial spirit that the little slug body it now occupies is superior to the glittering butterfly that it can become. All this is an attempt to make you think for yourselves, an attempt to make you go into astral traveling and clairvoyance seriously. If people are going to analyze everything, and try to, 220, find fault in everything without knowing better, then they are going to stultify their own development. We must keep an open mind, we must be ready to accept, we must know what we are talking about and not say, "Oh, that's not right, that's not what Einstein said." Einstein and people like Einstein said that the Earth was flat. Einstein and people like Einstein said man would never travel faster than the speed of sound. Well, we do, you know, some of us, and some of us travel faster than the speed of light. Astral travel is much, much faster. In the astral world, when we move about, we really whoop it up, but I do not need to tell you all this. If you will keep an open mind, and instead of trying to criticize destructively, if you will try to assimilate constructively for yourselves, then you will not find too great difficulty in doing astral travel. Keep in mind also that approximately every 2,000 years or so a new messiah, savior, or world leader appears on Earth. This is a cycle which continues through cycles, always. So we come to the end of another book, the 12th chapter written in the 12th hour of the cycle of Kali. May it be that something that I have written will help you on your way, and have faith in what I have written, because all I have written in all my books is true. 221.